G'day, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 227th, James 1 and 6, part 2. Let's get on with it. Just a little bit there of the New York Brass Band to get us into a recap. New York Brass Band features our listener James Lancaster, who got in touch with me. He's a bit behind episode 70 or something like that, where I started with Round Midnight and then stupidly said Thelonious Monk was the guy who played two saxophones at once. And James pointed out to me, of course, that was Roland Kirk, Thelonious Monk being the rather famous and very tricky jazz pianist. He did some weird shit with music, that guy. Very good. And as for the New York Brass Band, they're not from America or anything like that. It's actually the New From York Brass Band. And it's a very clever disguise, because if they said they were new from York and wanted to play in London, for example, then the Londoners might not be too happy about a big bunch of hairy, bloody men of the North turning up with big brass instruments. The Londoners would probably just shut the gates and send out the militia to see them off. So well done, those lads in the New York Brass Band, for that very clever disguise. Last week, we said goodbye to Betty, although we haven't put her back in a box at Westminster Abbey just yet. We'll let the new boy Jim do that in the fullness of time. We've met the Kitty King, Jim 6 and 1, and got into his teen years. Bit of trouble with Esme Stewart, but we got over that. We left it with Patrick Gray entering the story. Mary thinks he's working for her, but he's gone straight over to working for Jim. Let's have the Frenchie ambassador's thoughts on Jim. Three qualities of the mind he possesses in perfection. He understands clearly, judges wisely, and has a retentive memory. His questions were keen and penetrating, his replies sound, and in any argument, be it about religion or any other thing, he maintains the view that appears to him most true and just, to the extent that I have heard him support Catholic against Protestant opinions. The King is also well instructed in languages, science, and affairs of state, better, I dare say, than anyone else in his kingdom. He has a remarkable mind filled with virtuous grandeur, though he possessed a good opinion of himself and had a great desire to hide his deficiencies, attempting anything in pursuit of virtue. Though timid, for example, he wished to be greatly considered courageous, nor could he bear to be surpassed by other men. Upon hearing that a Scottish laird had passed 2 days without sleep, the King passed 3, and if ever a man succeeded in outstripping him, he abhorred them for ever. He disliked dancing and music in general, along with all the little fopperies of court life, whether they involve amorous talk or curiosities of dress. In particular, he had a special aversion to earrings. He never stays still in one place, taking singular pleasure in walking up and down, though his carriage is ungainly, his steps erratic and wandering, even in his own chamber. His manners are aggressive and very uncivil, both in speaking and eating, in his clothes and sports, as well as in conversation in the company of women. His body is feeble, though he himself is not delicate, and his voice is loud, his words grave. In a word, he is an old young man. In a word, that's 3 words, an old young man. Though he loves hunting, of course, above all other pleasures, galloping over hill and dale with loosened bridle for 6 hours at a time. Now that was a list of his good points. We also get that he's broke but still spends big. He's lazy, leaving government to others to run. And the ambassador will be warning Mary not to send the cash to a dear lad. Now, 1584, and the English have just given the Spanish ambassador the boot. Betty is keen to ensure a northern border is secure, and Jim will oblige by sending Patrick Gray to England to give the English all the gossip on Mary. Clear sign that Jim has abandoned Mary to political expediency. At the same time, Gray will also spill to the English that he doesn't really like Jim's man, James Stewart, and the English can do what they like with that information. Oh, is it an email? Yeah, of course it's an email. I really should switch that off when I'm doing this, shouldn't I? Anyway, let's make an email to Mary saying that Gray's not working for her anymore, and in fact he's working against her. King Jim don't care. the English have put him on the payroll at £4,000 a year. He can now say that the whole idea of Mary's about joint rule won't be going anywhere at all. Jim's got his eye on the succession, and the English had just passed a law that any Mary supporter would not be in the succession at all. Yeah, that's going to come back in a maybe the next episode, but just to upset Jim. Anyway, just to sink the boot, or perhaps to make it clear, Jim will write to Mary saying, "You will be the Queen Mother from now on." Mary will write back saying, "You ungrateful shit. I'm going to make Spanish Phil my heir instead of you." Jim will just stop writing to her. James Stewart, who Jim had made the Earl of Arran and Chancellor, has, oddly enough, been making a total dick of himself. Who'd have thought that? He's got no friends, and he's worked this out. He's going around armoured with hard men. He knows people would be happier if he just stopped breathing. Armour or whatever can't save you if you've pissed too many people off. James will initiate border talks with England. His man, Sir Thomas Kerr, will be a bit pissed off in the talks and shoot English Lord Russell, son of the Earl of Bedford. Everyone, though, will want to point the finger at James Stewart. Will Jim step in to save him? That £4,000-a-year pay packet from England says no. Nah. Jim will boo-hoo-hoo over his dear friend and toss him in the slammer. A week goes by and Jim will say, "Oh, the poor guy suffered enough, let him out." Betty, though, will strike back. Some of those Scotty nobles who had been part of Jim's capture earlier will be slipped back from England to Scotland. Jim will find a large bunch of hard men with them sitting outside Stirling Castle demanding to see James Stewart. Inside the castle, Stewart and Grey will do a bit of name-calling at each other. James Stewart will be allowed to slip out the back door. Title and his job are both gone. Off he goes until the nephew of the executed Morton finds him, and then he'll be made totally dead. This will all actually work out well for King Jim, and we should give him credit for making it work well. Exiled, now returned nobles will get their land back and be very grateful. Some radical churchy types hanging out in England will also come back and give up their radical ideas, except one dickhead who'll criticise Jim. There's always got to be one, hasn't there? He can go to the slammer with King Jim saying, "I give not one turd for your preaching." Yeah, not one turd. New Chancellor will be a smart operator who wants to stay out of limelight. He'll be good at showing off Jim's smarts while hiding Jim's incompetence. Royal authority is present and in good working order. James Stewart had been made a nice focus of hatred for the nobles, and they're all happy for a minute. Yeah, shouldn't last long. Even the Catholic nobles will take their place in the council. It's a nice balance. The returned exiles are all too busy trying to restore their bank balance to make any sort of trouble. King Jim has even found time to get a new favourite, 10-year-old Ludwig Stewart, son of the late Esme. Incidentally, King Jim is now 20. He can even sign off on a nice alliance with Betty that gives him good terms and, more importantly, security against war. It had been tricky. He can't really put Jim in the succession without recognising Mary had a place in it too. Besides, as we know, Betty doesn't want it spelled out because the English would all start jockeying to be Jim's best boys. Just as he got the alliance sealed and delivered, the news came in about the Babington plot. It looks like Jim couldn't believe what was going down. He thought a good idea would be to execute Mary's servants and then appoint new servants with top security clearances. Then perhaps Mary should go to the Tower, but he had no thoughts of an execution. Even after the trial and death sentence was given, he didn't think it would happen. Just to be on the safe side, he sent a delegation to England. Two objectives: save Mary's life and don't jeopardise my shot at the succession. Yeah, but which one's more important? If he can't have them both, and there is that matter of £4,000 a year coming in. Well, we might find out it's not coming in that well. Betty has checkmated Jim. Message comes in that Mary is very likely to die, plus a handy reminder that the alliance he signed guarantees the £4,000 and includes a clause that he can't be interfering with the English law stuff, and supporting Mary in any way would be seen as breaking that clause. Jim, though, is talking about two things only, his honour and his place in the succession. Those Scotty nobles, the ones that brought Mary down, will all be saying, if they kill our dear sweet Mary, then surely it will be war. New Earl of Bothwell, who, like his uncle, now dead Earl of Bothwell, will be plain speaking. Jim, if you let the English kill Mary, then you should hang the next day. Jim will laugh and say, yeah, sure, I'll definitely prepare for that. The action has done the impossible. Unite the Scotty nobles. Sadly for Jim, they expect him to fix the problem. Jim will have to write a strongly worded letter to Betty. Your dad killing your mum wasn't as bad as this. But he will get a bit of diplomacy in. I'm just saying this to protect your good name, which would be mud if you kill a queen. Then on to how all of Scotland are boo-hoo-hooing over this. The letter only makes it worse. And he was particularly annoyed that Jim had referred to Anne Boleyn as Henry's bedfellow. Betty will tell the Scotty envoys that she had just decided to delay the execution, but this letter was the last straw. Worse, the Scotty nobles thought the letter was actually piss weak, and he should have been way harder. Scotty envoy will have a quiet word with Robert Dudley. Dudley wants to know if Mary's death would put an end to the alliance. Nah, says our Scotties. The only thing that would end our alliance is if Betty put James right out of the succession. One last Scotty delegation will be sent in to Betty saying, can you keep Mary alive? And we'll guarantee she's no longer a problem. This would be something like her going to the Tower in solitary for life. Meanwhile, Jim knows about the chat with Robert Dudley and will write directly to him. That's more important than a delegation coming into chat. The letter, though, is ambiguous. We can't tell exactly what his position is, and that in itself probably tells us. If he wanted Mary saved, he'd have said it. Instead, he'll just say how fond and inconstant he would be if he preferred his mum over the succession. Yeah, so it's ambiguous, but I think we get the picture. Still, for the optics, he'll also send a letter to Betty saying how bad it is to kill someone who was anointed by God. So perhaps Mary should be sent overseas in exile. And don't forget, if you kill her, there might be guys out for revenge looking for you. That one will be delivered by his man Grey, who perhaps also had a verbal message. He'd be the right guy if you wanted a different verbal message. You and I know that the axe will fall. Mary will be dead again. Descriptions of Jim's reactions differ. One says it was absolutely nothing. He just got the news and kept on with his hunt. Another one says he was all, hooray, now I'm the sole ruler of Scotland with nobody to challenge me. One kind of one said he went to bed without any dinner and wanted to be on his Pat Malone the next day. Still, he'll give his nobles a bit of a chat about vengeance. A pity you might recall had blamed his secretary for delivering the signed death warrant without permission. We all think it's bullshit, but it allows Jim to write and say, hey, Betty, I can see you're totally innocent in all this. No disapproval from him, no hints that the alliance is in jeopardy, just his usual sign-off hint about the succession. And as for my part, I look that you will give me at this time such full satisfaction in all respects as shall be a mean to strengthen and unite this isle, establish and maintain the true religion, and oblige me to be, as before I was, your most loving whatever. As for Scotland, well, the churchy types will all suddenly remember they hated Mary, so they don't care. Nobles will have to talk up vengeance, so they'll be saying, we'll all be with you 110% when you go to war against Betty. Jim will just stay silent on that. But we will get some graffiti. Oh, fuck, it's in kind of Scotty English. To Jezebel, that English whore. Yeah, that'll be the English whore. Receive this Scottish chain, probably a message, as presages of her great Malhua, no Malhua, I don't understand great Malhua, for murthering of our queen, yeah, murdering the queen, yeah, something like that. It's got to the stage where Jim's got to do something, so Grey will be popped into the slammer. We do, after all, need to blame someone, so it'll be Grey who failed to save Mary. There'll also be half-hearted letters to King Henri III, who's still alive, Catherine de' Medici, who's still alive, and the Duke de Guise, who's still alive, saying, can you help me take revenge on Betty? Just to make sure they say no, he'll slip some Scotty hard men over to France to help Henri of Navarre. and Henri of Navarre's unofficial ambassador will come to Jim's court. He'll also try it on with Betty, suggesting she should make him a duke in the north of England, with, of course, a big pile of land. He kind of has that, doesn't he, the Lennox stuff. But Betty's not going to do that. Spanish Phil will give Jim a big distraction following Mary's death. He'll say his daughter should now be Queen of England due to Mary's will, or alleged will, I should say, and his own descent from John of Gaunt. But no, sorry, that'll be her, his daughter's descended from John of Gaunt. 10th Rieslave. Phil will write to his papal ambassador. You will impress upon His Holiness that I cannot undertake a war in England for the purpose merely of placing upon the throne a young heretic like the King of Scotland, who indeed, by his heresy, incapacitated to succeed. His Holiness, however, must be assured that I have no intention of adding England to my own domains, but to settle the crown upon my daughter, the Infanta. But, shit, really, if Phil took over England, then Scotland would surely be next. And Jim has Catholic nobles who might just join Team Phil. Trouble is, those Catholic nobles have become a bit powerful, and it was they who sprung him from the Ruthven kidnapping thing. They also maintain a handy balance against the churchy types, and if Phil were to succeed, it would be they who he would need to stay in the top job. Jim maintaining a moderation policy with his Catholics, though, might also help persuade English Catholics to support him in the succession. Jim will write a meditation on the Book of Revelation, that really weird shit in the magic book. His astronomers will all say, yeah, look, we're pretty sure 1588 will be it, the world will end. Or if not, it'll be a great upheaval. Jim will also bring in the Catholic Big Dick, Earl of Huntly, for a theological debate. Everyone will be saying Jim won this hands down. Even the Spanish ambassador, and whichever Gordon is the Earl of Huntly himself. In comes the Spanish Armada, and Jim will be loyal to his English alliance, making an offer of arms of port. When it's all done and dusted, he'll write a piece making comparison to the David and Goliath story, and I would still back a shepherd boy who is good at the slingshot against a big Philistine with a sword any day of the week, my dear listener. That still won't get Jim named in the succession, nor will it get him his pension, that £4,000. Nothing personal, we all know that Betty's is just tight with cash. Here's bad news though. Walsingham has intercepted a letter from Huntly to Spanish Phil. Sorry about your armada, mate, but next time we'll be ready to help out. Oh, that'll get a strongly worded letter to Jim from Betty. Huntly will be sacked from the captain of the Royal Guard and placed in a very nice slammer. Jim will come to dinner with him. After about a week, that'll be it. Okay, Huntly, off you go. And back into his job, and I hope you learned your lesson. Pressure will come to Jim from his top employee, Chancellor Maitland, and Huntly will be sacked again and told to go home. Now, Maitland, being a bit common, had copped stick from the nobles who saw him as an obstacle to their getting stuff out of Jim. Typical when we get one of those rare types in a top government job. Jim certainly values him, and Maitland right now is pushing through reforms to reassert kingly authority. It's time to get Scotland into the 16th century with a strong, well-oiled government machine. Maitland will tackle crime, which always goes down well with the common smellies. He's also getting Jim out of his playtime to be seen as a ruling king. He's tightened up the open-door policy of people just popping in to see the king. He's getting the border lords, the highland lords, and the lords of the isles under control. And worst for all the nobles, he's getting common smelly types on the council while reducing the nobles' influence. No wonder they hate him.
Look inside your tiny mind and look a bit harder. 'Cause we're so uninspired, so sick and tired of all the hatred you harbor. So you say it's not okay to be gay. Well, I think you're just evil. You're just some racist who can't tie my laces. Your point of view is medieval.
Yeah, jaunty little tune there from Lily Allen. Now, Jim should really be looking after Maitland, but he'll try the middle ground of keeping both Maitland and Huntley happy. Huntley's also looking to get lots of mates and relatives into court. One of these will be Alexander Lindsay, brother of the Earl of Crawford. He'll score a title Lord Spiney, get to be Vice Chamberlain, and get to share King Jim's bed. Now, Jim will even manage to escape a kidnapping attempt by Huntley without taking any action. Then we get another one. This time, Huntley to kidnap Jim with Bottle to come in and take care of Maitland. What's the king to do? He's got to take action, so it's leap into action for his first and pretty much only time of playing soldiers. He won't bugger around. Forces ready, nice and quick. Fast march in a couple of weeks. He's facing Huntley and his 3,000 hard men. Word's out that Huntley will try a surprise motherfucker night attack, so King Jim V, like Henry V at Agincourt, will have his guys spend the night armoured and in formation. Well done, lad. Jim will listen to all advice and make regular rounds to cheer up the lads. Huntley's guys can see what's going on, and that is a well-formed up army with a leader who looks like he knows what he's doing. They'll start to wander off. It's a bloodless win for Jim, and his decision will be clemency. Let him go. It's a march home then, with his guys getting tired and hungry, and without a captive Huntley, Jim can't really claim a mighty victory. It's a thin line between clemency and weakness, and your enemies will usually pick that you're weak. Jim will send a private message to Huntley. Surrender, and it'll all be okay. Huntley and Bottle will surrender. Be found guilty of treason, do a few months in a nice summer, and then it's on your way, lads. Message is that treason is no longer a high-risk venture. Yeah, maybe not a good message there, Jim. The church is shitty, Maitland's shitty, and Betty is shitty that the cream of the Catholic crop have been let off. Jim can be 23, and it's, oh, time to get serious about marriage. Two candidates, Catherine of Navarre, who's a Calvinist, and Anne of Denmark, who's a Lutheran. Churchy types, of course, want the Calvinist, while those who are just anti-Catholic want the Lutheran. Jim himself isn't that fussed on the girly type humans. He's just under pressure with that usual thing, we want an heir to the big chair. Other than that, he's said to be chaste. Now, Catherine the Calvinist is brother of Henri of Navarre, who's still currently fighting his fellow Frenchies, and he's broke. No fat dowry there. Anne the Lutheran is daughter of King Fred the Tight-Fisted, so not much of a big fat dowry there either. Calvinist Catherine is 8 years older than Jim. Lutheran Anne is 8 years younger than Jim. Calvinist Catherine was said to have something rather wrong with her that might stop her from having kiddies. Now, Jim's mind will be made up when a bunch of merchants burst into Maitland's bedroom one night, threatening to kill him because he's supporting Calvinist Catherine. They want Lutheran Anne because of their lovely trade deals with Denmark. Yeah, it's about the money, and Jim can see that. Off go the envoys to Denmark with Jim's terms. He wants a shit ton of cash, a treaty that the Danish Navy will support Scotland in any wars, Denmark to give up its claim to the Orkney Islands, and Denmark to join the anti-Catholic League. Fuck, says the King of Denmark. He's kidding, right? Fortunately for King Jim, King Fred's mum is still alive, and women can make deals. Princess Anne had 500 tailors already working on a bridal frock, and her granny wasn't about to see all that go to waste, so she'll talk Jim down from pretty much all of his demands. Yeah, pretty much the lot. While Anne's having her frock of magnificent constructed, Jim, on the other hand, was scrounging cash for a tailor for his wedding outfit. He's about the poorest king around. He will be begging letters to Cecil to get some of that promised cash, and Betty will come through, even though she's totally pissed off he didn't go with the Frenchy chick. Proxy wedding will be done in Denmark, and then Anne will get on a ship only to be blown back 3 times. Is it God with his mysterious messages again? No, it's just the weather. Captain O is saying it's witchcraft. While all this stuff has been going on, Jim has decided he is totally madly in love with Anne, so he's in Scotland fretting. He'll send his own ships to find out what's going on. Message comes back, oh good, she's in Oslo. trouble with the weather. In fact, this is Jim, get my Lord Admiral Bottle to go and do the job properly. Just to make sure, I'll go too. Oh, hang on, it's going to cost how much? Oh, fuck it. Maitland, that smart operator, has managed to get rich, so it'll be his share. Now, fair enough, he'd oppose the Danish chick for the French chick, so this is his way of saying, oh, sorry. Has Jim thought this through? Leaving Scotland may see somebody want to pop their ass on the big chair. Betty will have her guys on alert against some kind of Catholic coup in Scotland. Now, Jim had left a nicely balanced Privy Council in charge. He'll also smartly take Maitland with him. Yeah, they might kill him if Jim's away. President of the council will be Esme's 15-year-old son, Ludovic Stuart, now Duke of Lennox. Bothwell will insist that he's got to be Ludovic's chief advisor. Off goes the fleet with a nice wind behind them. It'll be pretty cold and there'll be a storm at the end, but safe harbour will be found 50 miles overland to Oslo. Jim will be straight in to meet Anne, and he wants a big old pash. No can do, say her ladies, our custom saying, no kissing on the first date. Fuck, that's his Jim, and fair enough, after all that travel, he'll kiss her. At age 24, Jim will do the real deal marriage with Anne. Jim was supposed to be away for 20 days, but the new family are treating him rather well. It's going to turn into 5 months, with Jim sending a message home. Put on a big show when I get back. These mob are pulling out all stops, and they were. I don't want to be ashamed. Part of Jim having a great time is that these Danes are pretty smart, and it's hard to find educated guys to talk to at Scotland. He's engaging in debates and attending lectures, and will meet brainiac Tycho Brahe, astronomer. Tycho had a false nose made out of brass. He'd lost his in a duel over a mathematical formula. But all good things must come to an end, so here they are back in Scotland, and the message had got through. It will be magnificent, by Scotty standards. Helped out by Anne bringing her silver coach and 6 white horses. 11 days later, and Anne will get a silly hat. Controversial, because she turned up in Edinburgh on the Sabbath. Oh dear. And we think that holy anointing oil is now a pagan and Jewish custom. Jim had said, fuck off, I got the holy oil and look how magnificent I am. Anne will get the oil and hopefully a nice little tweak of the nipples for her. But I'm not sure about that bit. Jim had got round the thing by selecting a Presbyterian type who said, yeah, sure, I'll toss on some holy oil. Other Presbyterian churchy types will complain. Jim will say, look, it's in the old book of magic, and if you don't like it, I could find a nice Catholic bishop to do it. Well, they can't let a Catholic do it, so checkmate. On goes the holy oil, and Jim will pop on the silly hat himself. Anne will swear to uphold the Presbyterian theme, despite that pagan and dewy oil sliding down her girlish charms. She'll soon get the total shits with the Presbyterian misogynist and actually convert to Catholicism. Anne of Denmark can now find out what Mary Queen of Scots had found out with the Scotty court. Dullsville. Boring. Games, masks, pageants, dancing are all out for our boring old white men nobles and especially the churchy types. We all need to be serious all the time. Anne will get a reputation for being a bit thick because she wants entertainments and distractions. She will put on fun stuff for herself and forget to do the magic show on a regular basis. King Jim will soon find out that her household costs more than his. Just to make this worse, she's prone to temper tantrums. This marriage won't be going well, but Jim will always be respectful and Anne will do the right thing, knocking out 7 kiddies. Henry Frederick, heir to the big chair. Betty, well known there. Margaret, after his great-grandma. Charles, Robert, Mary, of course, and Sophia. We can put Margaret, Robert, Mary and Sophia out of our minds because they'll all die as babies, leaving us Henry Frederick, Betty, who will become Queen of Bohemia, and Kitty Charles, spare heir. It's actually well done that their relationship did as well as it did. It certainly seems that Jim and might have prayed the gay away until Anne's death. Then it'll be back to the boys for him. The observation at the time was that they were able to live together as well as a man and wife could without actually talking to each other. Officially, Jim will also be true to Anne during the marriage, but our English report home about a king's mistress a couple of times, and Jim also wrote poetry about a mistress who came to him at night. Obviously, he couldn't resist the girlish charms of a girlie who just turns up at night time. Who could? 24-year-old Jim, though, is certainly interested in other women. Not for a bit of rumpy pumpy. No, it's getting to his time to become terribly interested in witches. Oh dear, look out, women. Even rational and logical people like our King Jim can fall prey to superstition. Witches can do all sorts of stuff, according to Jim. Nasty stuff. They can even fly, so long as they hold their breath. Yeah. Witchcraft for Jim is a sport played by girls. That's because it was Eve who was tempted by the devil to eat the forbidden fruit. And hang on there, Dick, all you biblical students are saying, check your facts, Dick. All right, I will. Let's see. Genesis 2:15. You are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die. Oh, okay. Instant death for eating of the tree of knowledge. In comes the devil for a chat with Eve, who will confirm, yeah, sure, God said if I eat of the tree of knowledge, I'll die. You will certainly not die, the serpent said to the woman. The devil's just called bullshit on God's word. And it turns out he's right. Our happy couple will eat of the tree of knowledge and, yeah, no, they're not going to instantly die. Now, who's the bad guy in this story? He, they will dob on the devil. The serpent deceived me and I ate. Oh, bloody Eve. She's also telling pork pies. The serpent didn't deceive you. He told you the truth. He said you won't die and you didn't. No wonder we humans got off to a bad start. Jim will even write a book on the subject, Demonology. We can't be too hard on Jim, I guess. Doing witches is what the cool kings do at the moment, and going for them is really nothing new. It's just ramping up. Like the most hideous things, it's been a very slow ramp up. We've had wise women or cunning women forever. You may remember Eleanor Cobham, the wife of Humphrey Henry V's brother. For the English, when the Black Death turned up in Ted III's time, some of us thought that perhaps these women were evil and had given us that rather nasty time. Get the 1542 and the Mad Welsh King, and it'll be an Act of Parliament. The Witchcraft Act with the death penalty for witches. Teen King Ted repealed the Act. 1562, and Betty will put in her Act. An Act against conjurations, enchantments and witchcrafts. In this one, you only cop the death penalty if you actually harm somebody. Otherwise, it's a slammer, which could be a fate worse than death. Scotties will put in their act about the same time, which is death only as a penalty. Yeah, anything you do is death. With the coming of King Jim to England, and I'm getting there in my own good time, we'll get an act in 1604. This is the one that will bring in that English-only thing, the familiars. It will also take the matter away from the churchy courts and give it to the state courts. Minor offences still get the slammer. Jim, being logical, will think on the question. Why are all the witches turning up now? Yeah, that's a good question, Jim. Have you got an answer? Of course. We're in the end days. No, you aren't. Right now, there's been a bit of witch craze going on in Europe, and Jim's up for a bit in Scotland. The Presbyterian churches were, of course, very much into it. Oh, yes, 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 we can get women. Midnight orgies is the go for them. Jim will get personally involved in the examination of these women. Evidence is coming in that 300 individuals of various social ranks had teamed up to use black magic against Jim. Is 300 a magic number? I would have gone for 666. Plus, there are 3 active covens working against his marriage. We'll even get a description of the Prince of Darkness himself. Yeah, from an eyewitness. The devil, clad in a black gown with a black hat upon his head, preached unto a great number of them out of the pulpit, having light like candles around him. His face was terrible, his nose like the beak of an eagle, his eyes great and burning, and his limbs were hairy, with claws upon his hands and feet like a griffin. He spoke in a hollow voice. Oh, I hope I haven't scared you, my dear listener. Here's a typical Scotty way to get yourself a nice confession. This is an actual case. Agnes Simpson, examined by King Jim personally at Holyrood House. And, you know, I just can't see myself ever having a torture chamber at home. I'd really want it off-site somewhere, but not Jim. Okay, let's get to poor old Agnes. She's chained to the wall of a cell by a thingy we've invented. It's called a witch's bridle, made of iron, and has got four sharp prongs that go into Agnes's mouth. Oh, nasty. Two prongs against the tongue and two against the cheeks. No sleep for Agnes, and from time to time we'll grab hold of that rope we've tied around her head and jerk her about a bit just to keep her awake. Now, sleep deprivation will get you every time, my dear listener. Agnes can confess to 53 charges and be off to the blessed relief of a death by fire. The schoolmaster, Dr. John Fian, can enjoy the rack, the boots, and have needles put under his fingernails, and then we'll just pull those fingernails off. Oddly enough, he'll confess to whatever the fuck they want him to. Barbara Napier, Lady Angus, widow of the Earl of Archibald, will find that high social rank is no saviour to this shit fuckery. Now hang on, she'll be acquitted. Friends in high places tell Jim she's pregnant, so it's off you go. But she is not pregnant. What she should have done is just fuck like a bunny the minute she was out and get herself up the spout. Jim will put her jurors on trial for getting the verdict wrong. Oh shit, that's a bit over the top, Jim. Barbara will be off to the fire. At least 70 people will be prosecuted in short order for attempted regicide by magic of King Jim. Does he not see that this magic stuff is pretty fucking crap? 70 fucking attempts and here he is, not even a runny nose. No, hang on a tick. Jim is bright and he's thought of this. So, in his happy torturing, he will discover that witches had complained to the devil that their magic wasn't working. Devil says it's because Jim is anointed by God. Oh, it's that holy oil keeping Jim alive and well. Sea Captain Robert Grierson won't even make it to trial. Died in the torture chamber, but he gave up a name. Bothwell. Oh, dear. Other tortured victims will also be asked about Bothwell, and we surely get the answer we want. Oh, yes. Bothwell wants Jim dead.
When I look out my window, many sights to see. And when I look in my window, so many different people to be, that it's strange, so strange. You got to pick up every stitch, you got to pick up every stitch, you got to pick up every stitch. Must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch.
Yeah, thanks, Donovan, but I've gone too far again. Like, I'm already backwards from the main series, aren't I? And I've got to go backwards in the backwards. I'm just in reverse. But it must be done. Jim had a nice 21st bash in 1587. It was an excuse to get all the top nobles into the room so he could turn them all into good buddies. Easy to do, get them to drink three pledges of eternal friendship and there you go. Don't know why earlier Scotty kings didn't just do that. And it's get the guys into pairs for a nice march around with enemies all paired up. Now, hang on. Didn't Henry VI do that in England so we wouldn't have the Wars of the Roses? Didn't work that well for Henry, but it's sure to work for Jim this time. Common Smellies are a bit amazed, but we may not be. It actually makes Jim look like a weakling as a Scotty King. No, let's be clear, it did not work one little bit. Nobles are still out to get Maitland out of his job, and there's been a near miss with a rising averted. But now we find out that Bothwell is using the dark arts, and that's too much to bear. Well, maybe not that, but Bothwell is being treated with leniency. New Bothwell is remarkably like his uncle, old Bothwell, Mary's last husband, an all-round nasty guy. Bothwell's patch is lawless and a cause of problems. He himself is intelligent, charming and witty, so he does have his fans, but he's pretty much a constant source of problems. It's the charm and good looks that keeps him in Jim's good books. Bothwell also smartly set himself up as champion of the Presbyterians, so the churchy guys love him. This, of course, means that he and the Catholic nobles hate each other. His support by the church makes him a dangerous player. Okay, back to 1591 with the accusations of black magic firming up and Bothwell is off. He's in his hideout living in the forest. Council will say running away is proof of guilt, but there's plenty of sympathy for him because of his hatred of Maitland. And convicting a guy on the word of witches is a bit much, if you're a noble, that is. And hey, Jim, you were all very forgiving of the Catholic Huntley. Shouldn't that same forgiveness apply here? Bothwell will be encouraged by this and start making public appearances. Jim will look to raise troops to go and get the bugger. But there's no standing army for Jim to use, and he's not that popular to get other guys to come through with hard men. 27th of December 1591, and Bothwell, along with yet another Archie Douglas and about 50 unpleasant hard gentlemen, will make a daring raid on Holyrood Palace. Where's Jim's guard, you ask? No, he can't afford any. Jim will hide in a tower, and Maitland will lock himself in his room. There's a general smashing about and fires being lit. So much for the king's authority. City bell will be rung. This means we all need to turn out with our best sharp garden implements and come to the king's aid with our secateurs ready to kill. Bothwell and co. will murder some servants, then run away. Next day, nobles will turn up for a Thanksgiving service at St. Giles. Sadly, it's clear the nobles don't really have their hearts in this. They may have been happier if Bothwell had succeeded. At least there are 8 of Bothwell's guys hanging from the palace walls. Jim will move out of Holyrood and into the castle. Jim needs to go off Bothwell hunting in person, but it's Bothwell territory, so Bothwell knows the terrain and he's got plenty of mates to help. Bothwell, meantime, is still making public appearances so people know he's not really bothered. With this distraction, other nobles can have their own fun. The Earl of Huntly was still shitty that Mary had taken the Earl of Moray title away from his family to give it to her half-brother, James Stuart. Making it worse, the current Earl of Moray had got it by marrying the daughter of James Stuart. Just to confirm that Scotties aren't invented with names, the current Earl is James Stuart. He's actually James Stuart Doon, known as the Bonny Earl, handsome and high-spirited. Huntley, of course, hates him. Hang on, though, more intrigue. In comes Lord Worcester, finally bringing a wedding present from Betty, and along with the wedding present, intercepted letters from Huntley to Spanish Phil. Sure, says King Jim, tell me something I don't know. So, another pardon for Huntley, but not without conditions. Huntley has to kiss and make up with the Bonny Earl, who he hates. The boys can both come for dinner at Donnybristle. Great. Maybe not for the Bonny Earl. King Jim has his own hates. Anybody who had anything to do with dead Uncle James Stuart and anyone who is mates with Bothwell. Now the Bonny Earl certainly has both those boxes ticked. Gossip is also out that the Bonny Earl may be giving the Queen a bit of rumpy pumpy. And if he was observant, he would notice that Maitland's been running his eye over the Bonny Earl's lands. If he was more than observant, he would know that Maitland has a warrant for his arrest for aiding and abetting Bothwell. He may be bonny, but he doesn't seem to be too bright coming in for that dinner. The bonny Earl will get to Donny Bristle. Jim Huntley and 40 of Huntley's hard men are on their way, but having a nice hunt. No rush. Huntley will say, "Hey, Jim, there's a bunch of Bothwell's guys nearby. You keep hunting, dear lad, while I and my hard men go and sort those fuckers out." But Huntley and the hard men, and there's another rock band right there, Huntley and the hard men, who will be off to Donny Bristle. Bonny Earl will hold out for a bit, but Huntley will set it on fire. Out comes the Earl, rushing towards the beach, and there Huntley has him. Huntley will do the job personally, dagger through the face. No comeback on Huntley, just standard practice amongst Scotty nobles. Huntley will have to go to the nice slammer for about 5 minutes, then off you go. Presbyterian nobles will be shitty. Edinburgh mob will riot. That's okay, Jim has Maitland to sort out those problems. But between the riot and the pissed off Presbyterians, Jim will have to tell Huntley that this is not going well. Billy will chip in, telling Jim that clemency for Catholics was a bad idea, particularly a loose cannon like Huntley. If you and I look at this from Jim's point of view, we may see that keeping the Catholic and Presbyterian nobles at each other creates a bit of a balance, with Jim able to hopefully sit comfortably in the middle. Jim will write back saying, "Hey, it's a shame that you can't pay my pocket money as easily as you said you'd give it to me." Betty will just increase her financial support to Bothwell. And here he comes. Another midnight attack at Falkland Palace. 300 hard men and a battering ram. King Jim will have to hold out for 7 hours till help arrives. Good news, though. Two of Bothwell's guys will be caught. Not common smellies, real lads. One will escape the same night, aided by one of the Queen's ladies who fancied a bit of that particular Scotty. Jim will now have his first fight with his missus. Pressure is ramping up on Maitland, who will need to retire to his estates. King Jim is flitting here and there and taking a low profile. Summer 1593, and here comes Bothwell, and this time he'll crack it. He's picked up some top support. Lennox, Athol, and Ochiltree. And Lady Athol is inside Holyrood Palace. She can just open the door, and in comes Bothwell. It's a chat with Bothwell agreeing to retire in exchange for a full pardon of everything, including the black magic stuff. And hey, look, King Jim has a nice bodyguard now. All Bothwell's guys, but let's call them a bodyguard. Bothwell will get his pardon. Bothwell will write to Betty saying, "Hey, Betty, put pressure on to make me Lord Lieutenant of Scotland, and I shall keep Jim nicely in his box." But Bothwell has made a mistake. Part of the deal was he was to retire from court for a while, and that's allowed Jim to do deals. Reunite some guys, get Maitland back, and slip away to raise an army. It's good timing. Some of those Scotty nobles are saying, "Are we going back to the time when we all just started killing each other? We need the monarchy to be strong." And if we look at Bothwell, then what's he got? A big swinging dick and no policies. He's just in all this for himself. 1594, and Bothwell wants another go. Betty has seen he's a dick, so she sent him £400. Not much if you want to do something big. He'll do okay initially, defeating some cavalry that will have Jim rushing back to Edinburgh as fast as he can go. Jim will raise 1,000 militia and get his big cannons on the move. Bothwell can't answer that, so he'll run away to England. Betty will say, "Who's this guy Bothwell? I've never heard of him." Bothwell can now show us that he's stupid as his uncle by teaming up with his enemy, Huntley. Huntley has a plan hatched by a couple of Jesuits. 3,000 Spanish hard men to come over from Flanders. 500 to make Scotland Catholic again, with the rest invading England. Now, Jim can't let that slide, so he will campaign and hang some guys while the leaders all hide out. Jim's policy of leniency, though, will continue. He'll tell the English ambassador that he can't take the Catholic nobles on. They're too powerful. Parliament and Jim's wanting the rebels' lands forfeited. That'll be a no from Parliament. Okay, how about we pardon the Catholics from their Spanish conspiracy on condition that they turn Presbyterian? Okay, well, we'll pass that act, but no conversions will be happening. The Catholic Nobles and their new friend Bothell will have a nice big party. Jim, meanwhile, is saying to anyone who'll listen, help me do over Bothell and I'll banish the Catholic Nobles. Okay, say the Presbyterian Nobles and, of course, Presbyterian churchy types. Let's raise the feud, or whatever the Scotties call the thing. They still have one. September 1594, and Jim will ride on out. Top churchy guys in front of him, so we all know that God is on our team. First engagement is a minor skirmish, but it's a win for Team Rebel. Pray harder, churchy types, you're letting the team down. But when the rebels see the main force thereof, to destroy their own buildings, can't let them fall into the hands of your enemies. Huntley and one other earl will accept exile. Bothwell is on the run, but he'll also end up accepting exile to Europe. He will end up dying in poverty in Spain. Dickhead could live happily ever after as an earl with lots of cheeky serving wenches to keep him amused. Huntley will end up coming back and getting yet another pardon. Jim needs him to balance against the church. Huntley will even convert. For a bit. He's going to outlive Jim and will revert to the true faith when Jim is dead. Jim's sort of triumphed over the nobles, but really it looks more like this. They saw it as the king runs the show. Jim's a bit pissweak, so he's actually not a bad option for them. Some tough guy could make their lives unpleasant. So sure, long live Jim Six. Bothell was just being a dick with no real plan or vision. The Catholic nobles can see that Catholic isn't going to be great again, so we should just get with the program and forget about fighting for some fat rich guy in Rome with a silly triple hat. The nobles can also see that Betty is old, and like the English, they can see that it's going to be Jim next, we're pretty sure. Last nail in the coffin is that, believe it or believe it, with all the bits and pieces of peace in Scotland, we finally have a middle class emerging. These guys have money, which means power, and what they want is stability. On that basis, they will always support the king in need. They may be finally working out that cooperation is the go rather than conflict. Jim's big problem now is the Presbyterian Church. They want him to denounce the Anglican Church with its evil mass being said in English and whatever. Jim won't bow down to Betty on the subject of Puritans nicking off to Scotland. She will write, "There is risen both in your realm and mine a sect of perilous consequence, such as would have no kings but a presbytery to take our place while they enjoy our privilege. Yes, look well unto them. I pray you to stop the mouths or make shorter the tongues of such ministers as dare presume to make orisons in their pulpits for the persecuted in England for the gospel." "Nah," says Jim. He should have said yes, Jim. "Nah," says Jim. "Look, I banned my mob from saying prayers for the Puritans and, okay, here's one guy you can have back because he's given me the shits." Jim will get legislation through so that the Presbyterians can have their own form of government to determine churchy policy. That's not a bad move because they can now just argue amongst themselves. He'll also rescind the legislation recognising the Catholic bishops. Now, I've been saying Presbyterian for a while now, but this is where the Scotties actually become Presbyterians. After years of saying bishops were useless and we don't want any, the churchy types, with that new government of churchy types, are going to have them back. Yeah, they've worked out that they need them. But they're called presbyter, not bishop. So, you can see, my dear listener, totally different. Yes, if it's got a different name, it must be different. Now, presbyter comes from the old Greek, meaning leader of a Christian congregation, and based on the older Greek, presbyteros, meaning elder. But it's no good. Hanging on to Catholic nobles as a counterweight to the Presbyterian Church is just sending the church more radical. Just as well he's got Maitland who can negotiate, but 1595 Maitland will die. But 19th of February 1594, kiddie number one, a boy first go. People go into party mode and for nobles it's another target for kidnapping. Exactly what had happened to King Jim himself. Take the baby, force the ruler out, become the regent. Simple plan. On the plus side, it makes Jim even better as a prospect to an heir to Betty. Kitty named Henry Frederick for his granddads, Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley, the dickhead, and King Fred of Denmark. Jim will scrape together some cash for patents. It'll need a Catholic bishop to do the holy anointing oil because the Presbyterians now just don't do that shit. Feast in Psalm 128. For thou shalt eat the labours of thine hands. O well is thee, and happy shalt thou be. Betty will be godmother and even send presents. Nobody expected her to. She's notoriously tight. But it's going to be another fight for our king and queen. Scotty, princes, to be brought up in quiet seclusion at Stirling Castle. No way, says Anne. Kiddies are brought up by the women. Anne may have wanted custody for political leverage. She's been playing at politics. Jim will allow her a visit, but then write immediately to the Earl of Mar, who's at Stirling. Nobody gets to see Henry, and particularly not the Queen. No, nothing without my express permission. Anne will start sending messages from Holyrood Palace on a regular basis. Please come and see me, I've got a very runny nose. Jim won't be going. He's thinking it's a kidnap attempt. Anne will finally send a doctor who says, oh look, she's fair dinkum, mate, her nose is really runny. Jim will go and be all romantic and they can wander off to Falkland together. Jim will write helpful hints for the married types. For your behaviour to your wife, treat her as your own flesh. Command her as her lord. Cherish her as your helper. Rule her as your pupil. And please her in all things reasonable. Be never angry both at once, but when you see her in a passion, you should with reason subdue yours. For when you are both settled, you are better to judge of her errors. And when she has come to herself, she may be best made to apprehend her offence. Yeah, I'm not convinced that would stand up in the modern world. Jim will continue to behave affectionately with Anne, but there's baggage there and cultural differences, and of course there is the minor thing that Jim prefers boys. Jim will find that Maitland's death was a bit liberating for him. It'll take him 3 years to fill the job. Meantime, he can do the ruling all by himself. It'll be made a lot easier because Maitland had set the foundations of government in very good order. Jim will be straight into law and order. He's also going to get into gun control. No open carry in Scotland. Yeah, amazing. He'll bring in feuding nobles and use carrot and stick approaches to get them to kiss and make up. He will be making his stamp on Scotland at a time when Scotland was probably ready for that to happen. Jim also, though, he wants to tackle the Highlands and the Isles where the lords are a bit wild and woolly. Let's bear in mind, Scotland does not have a common language or a common culture, and the languages they use certainly aren't English. Good luck with the Highlands and the Isles, mate. He won't even get there on his first couple of goes, and calling the lords in will likewise get no result. I know, says Jim, I'll do that brilliant colonisation thingy that's going so well for the Poms in Ireland. Off go cultured common smellies to the Isles, where they'll soon be absorbed into the wild and woolly culture of the Isles. Let's just cut to the chase and say that Jim's policies for the Highlands and the Isles were duds. He will, though, do better on the border. English capture Kinmont Willie, naughty border raider. They'd use trickery in the capture so the border lords will swear revenge. Scotty border warden Sir Walter Scott will climb the castle walls, get into the slammer, and then it's free Willie. Betty will demand that Jim arrest Sir Walter and send him for the Queen's justice. Scotty nobles say, don't send him, Jim. Jim will send him. Jim had shown the nobles Betty's very angry letter, along with an earlier letter where she said she would not block his succession. Along comes a baby girl for Jim, and he will of course now name her Betty. In comes Sir Walter to meet Betty. How dare you storm my castle? Asks Betty. He will ask, what is there, madam, that a brave man dare not do? Oh, fair call, says Betty, and tells her guys, if I had 1,000 Sir Walters, I could do over any country in Christendom. Sir Walter then wasn't in any danger at all, but Jim's credibility with the border lords has weakened from piss weak to who cares about his dick. But Jim isn't piss weak. It will be a new and oddly fair treaty with England that will bring tranquillity to the border for about 40 years. Even a fair deal won't bring an immediate halt, though, to guys whose culture it is to raid into England. Jim will follow up with plenty of visits and plenty of hangings to those guys who haven't got with the program. But I think we might leave it there. Jim's in his early 30s and that English silly hat is not too far away. Just a little bit of David Gilmour and the boys there from the old Live in Pompeii thing, whenever that was, fucking long time ago, to get us into some historical fiction, which is what I meant to say. After really enjoying the novel about Little Matilda a few weeks ago, that was The Wife of the Bastard by Hilda Lewis, I thought I'd like another crack at one of the novels. And this one's set just a bit in the future from where we are. It's called The Witch and the Priest. Our witch in this will be Joan Flower, who we covered in the Witches special, and she might actually come back in the podcast. In the Witches special, we had a look at the Duke of Buckingham as the potential bad guy, rather than Joan and her two daughters. Now in this novel, witches are real, the devil is real, God is real, and Joan herself has now become a ghost. She's come back for a chat with the local priest because she's been rejected by both heaven and hell, and he needs to see if he can fix this for her. You might be saying, hey Dick, you don't like the magical stuff in your books, but it's fine and dandy in this one. All this stuff could be just happening inside the head of our very elderly priest, who might be feeling just a tad guilty. Hilda Lewis is using these fantastical things as an allegory for us. It's a bit like Sir Salman Rushdie, who we can never call a fantasy author. No, no, no. He's a literary author who uses magic realism. Magic realism is for grown-up serious readers, while fantasy is for fun-loving younger people. Coming back to this book, I thought it was bloody excellent. Now, Hilda surely knows how to write. Highly recommended for me is Hilda Lewis, The Witch and the Priest. And so it's just a matter of what we go out with. And it's my promise to you, my dear listener, to get the silly hat on King Jim 1 and 6 next week. We'll go out with Coronation by Cassandra Nostalgia. Hope to see you next week. Bye.